Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello, hello, hello. It is Twitter Thursday on the Locked On NFL podcast. I am Matt Williamson at Williamson NFL. Feel free to drop me a note there anytime, especially Twitter time. And as I said, today is Twitter Thursday. I'm still all stuffed up and sinusy and sneezy and snotty and one like the Seven Dwarfs or whatever. I don't know if it's the weather or what, but we just got tons of snow, so I'm not sure I can blame the weather anymore, but whatever. That's why I sound crap-a-roo. But we're just going to get right into Twitter Thursday here. And where did he... I just had it here a second ago, but I will find it. There's a old question. All right, all right. Jason at JPEG asks a very early Twitter Thursday question. I like it. With bad market for O-lines, does either Zeitler, guard for the Bengals, or Wagner, right tackle for the Ravens, hit free agency? Or do you expect tags if they don't sign? Interesting question. That's why I really wanted to single this one out. Because there's so many teams that could use Wagner or Zeitler right now. And let alone, if you're the Bengals, you're weak at center, you're weak at right tackle, Zeitler's a free agent, your starting guard, and Whitworth's a free agent. So you absolutely can't allow him to leave. I would think he has a better chance to be franchised than Wagner. He's also a little better at what he does. It would be really telling, though. I mean, if by chance Baltimore franchises Wagner, I think that's a huge indication that... you know, that there's a massive shortage, that they don't think they can replace him. They'll gladly overpay him for the year or buy time to talk a long-term deal with them. I think that would be a massive indication of what I've been saying all along of, boy, there is a massive shortage. Because, I mean, trust me, whenever the franchise tag designation was created, it wasn't for guys like Ricky Wagner in mind. You know, I mean, above average starting right tackles, but there's a lot of teams right now that could use an above average starting right tackle, that's for sure. I also had another, I can't find it now, so I hope you're listening. I would have loved to said your name and throw this out there. And when you, and whoever it was that sent the tweet, it was about a day ago, I originally thought it was crazy, you know, and maybe it is. And maybe if you talk to NFL people, they would laugh me off the stage on this. But question mark, whoever it was, I apologize, asked me, what about if you're the Patriots, sit Brady for the first months of the season next year too? And I'm like, well, that's crazy. You know what I mean? But he's a 40-year-old dude. I mean, they wouldn't have Garoppolo. If you had Garoppolo, yeah, okay. You know, I mean, and I'm not saying they should do it. But it's just an interesting talking point. You know, the Patriots, I feel like they could go 2-2 with Brissett. I mean, I don't even know their schedule. I don't think anybody in the division is going to sneak up on them, knock them out of the playoff spot. Maybe they go 1-3 and it goes bad, but you can still put Brady in. You know, it's not like he's, you know, not allowed to play like last year. But he's old, and save him, and it really feels like the Patriots view the first month of the season as the preseason anyways. You know, they do a lot of new things, they try stuff, and then they hit their stride when it matters most. I just wanted to throw it out there. I'm not saying they should do it. You know, hey, Tom, sorry, you're inactive week one. You're inactive week two. You know, just grab a seat on, grab a clipboard and hang out with us. I mean, he probably wouldn't like that, but if you could keep him a little fresher when it matters most, as we saw this year, I mean, again, Belichick might laugh me off the stage on this one, and it is kind of crazy to even think about, but I don't know. I mean, it's an outside-the-box way of thinking, and if you had Garoppolo, I'd be a lot more inclined to do it, and I don't think they will have Garoppolo. And that brings me actually to, I think tomorrow I'm going to break down the Patriots offseason too, speaking of Garoppolo and whatnot. But Crazy talk, I know, but kind of fun thing to talk about. Okay, James Kareen asks me, Jay Cutler to the Jets? No. To me, that's the worst thing you could do. When we talk Jets offseason, I am always going to say, shred this thing. Get rid of Marshall, maybe Decker, Revis, Harris, Mangold, you know, all the old dudes. Forte. Anyone that makes money that isn't great, which I don't think there's any that qualify that are great. I think you take a Browns-like approach and totally start from scratch. You know, and Cutler would be the total opposite approach of what I would do at the quarterback position. Not to mention, and I don't know him, and he probably gets a worse rap than he deserves, but he doesn't exactly seem like the mentoring type, you know, for a Hackenberg. You can't flush Hackenberg down the toilet. I mean, a second-round pick. Somebody in that building liked Hackenberg a heck of a lot less than a year ago. I mean, to me, I would rather almost go this season kind of like the Browns did, and they didn't find their guy, but play Hackenberg, maybe Petty, but especially Hackenberg, and build around him with youth and have two or three terrible years and build like crazy through the draft. Do not try to put a Band-Aid on it. I think it's a gaping wound. I've said, you know, time and time again, I think I'd rather be the GM of the Niners or the Browns than the Jets right now. I think their roster situation, resources, etc., is probably the worst in the league. And to go get a Cutler or something like that would just go in down the same wormhole. Joe Marino, who you guys know, he's been on the show, great draft guy. He asks, from your scouting days, what were your go-to questions to ask prospects that lead to the most revealing, useful information? Speaking of which, and I don't know if this is public yet, I'm not going to, but Joe and Kyle are no longer on the Locked On NFL Draft podcast. We are going to have a new announcement if that hasn't happened already. I know who it is. I'm a fan of the new folks coming in. So if you've been looking for that one, it's a highly successful podcast, and Joe and Kyle did a great job building it up. But Joe, one example I just wanted to give, and you know, was at the Combine. For those of you that don't know at the Combine, and I'll be at the Combine this year, I'm pretty excited about it. I'll be broadcasting from there to talk to you guys. There's basically, they're like hotel rooms almost, but there's these rooms, it's like a train station, and they blow a horn every 15 minutes, and a prospect, you line up the prospects you want, and they come in your room, sit down for 15 minutes, a horn blows, then they go visit the Raiders. And I remember when I was at the Browns, and it depends who's in there. Like, you know, I wasn't a decision maker. I was only in there for two or three prospects. You know, just kind of kept my mouth shut and watched. And it's kind of dumb, to be honest. I mean, 15 minutes, by the time you shake every hand in there and you smile and how's things going, and, you know, the horn blows. You know, like, I don't know if you learned that much. But there was a high prospect. You end up going in the top 10. I'm not going to bash him. But he was a highly athletic, highly sought-after offensive tackle prospect. He ended up going high in the draft. Everyone knew he would. But the question was work ethic and selfishness and does he love football? And he certainly wasn't a glass eater on the field. And as he was walking out, he had his guard down. And one of the scouts that had been doing this a long time asked him real quick, Pro Bowl or Super Bowl? And without hesitation, he said Pro Bowl. You know, which is the wrong answer. That you want a guy that's more interested in going to the Super Bowl than the Pro Bowl. And who knows? I maybe caught them off guard, and you know, do you look too much into that? But knowing this player's history and our concerns, when he walked out there, it was like, yeah. You know, and hey, there's nothing wrong with going to the Pro Bowl. I mean, we'd love to have a Pro Bowl left tackle. But his mindset was more based on him than the team, you know. So that's a good one. I mean, especially if you can just throw it out there and see what they say like that, you know, Pro Bowl or Super Bowl. So Go Bonus asked me, and I never thought of this, but was O.J. Simpson the single biggest weapon the Steel Curtain took on during their 70s reign? You know, like, who are the elite offensive players? This is before the Chargers, before Dan Fouts and my man Eric Coryell, I still think should be a Hall of Famer. I would say so. You know, I mean, by all accounts, and I actually was talking to Craig Wolfley about this a couple weeks ago, everyone in the building knew OJ was getting the ball. It wasn't like they had a great passing game, and sometimes the weather was bad. And all his off-the-field things aside, you know, when I watch him, I think he's actually one of the most underrated running backs in NFL history. In terms, I mean, I think he's right at the top. I mean, his highlights are unbelievable. Big, strong, fat. I mean, everything you could want. I mean, I think he's better than the common 20-year-old out there knows. So maybe that is the answer. You know, like, who was the toughest offensive player that the 70s Steelers played against? I will tell you that when I was, and I've told you this before, you know, like, when I was a kid, you weren't taught to hate the Browns, Oilers at that time, Bengals, as much as you were told to hate the Raiders. You know, so those 70s Steeler-Raider matchups were legendary and historic and extremely competitive. And my dad always said, you know, my dad's kind of the opposite of the Pro Bowl, Super Bowl. He's totally the Super Bowl type guy. That I've probably told this story before, but he said the two most fearsome players to me, you know, growing up as a Pittsburgh sports fan, were Ken Stabler and Pete Rose, for the exact same reasons. You know, Pete Rose, if you're down two in the ninth, he'd get hit or draw a walk or double in the corner and somehow end up on third and driving around. You know, like, it was never over. And Stabler was the same way. And I don't think Stabler or any of those Raiders, you know, those Raider-Steeler games were more defense or were nearly the offensive weapon of an OJ. But Clifford Branch was a mean dude. I mean, he was a scary, scary deep threat. Certainly in the Super Bowls, I think Staubach comes to mind. I mean, talking about great players of all time. I mean, he did damage to the great Steeler defenses. The other one was a little bit later in their reign, and the defense wasn't as strong as it was in the mid-70s, was Earl Campbell. And another guy, when I'm asked, you know, like, who are the running backs that should be higher on the all-time lists of, you know, and people making running backs, I always say Juice and I always say Campbell. You know, that there's very, very unique. And, you know, he did a lot of damage to the Steelers. And in a way, that team, you know, the Houston Oilers was a really, really good team that were just in the wrong place at the wrong time when Pittsburgh was as good as they were. And Earl Campbell was the feature. So I guess OJ, you know, would be the guy that the Steeler defense would probably least want to see. I mean, superstar. All right, I'm going to take a few more questions here. Guillermo Cebrosis. I'm sorry, I butchered the heck out of your name there. But he's at Raise Havoc. He's obviously a Bucks fan and asked me, with the Bucks having so many role guys to resign, including the so-called starters on defense, who's worth bringing back? And without digging into a whole show of Bucks offseason, one thing I do encourage you to check out is I wrote two articles for The Score today, this week, I think you'll really like. The NFC came out today. The AFC came out on Tuesday, where I picked three teams that are in the best position in terms of draft capital, free agency money, guys they have to resign, that they could make a big splash in free agency. And without totally pulling back the curtain, Tampa was one of them. You know, that I think they're in a position that they can really change their roster. And by that I mean in a good way. I mean, I know that they have a lot of, quote, starters up, but there aren't many guys who are free agents to be, even though they have a lot of them, that I think are must signs by any stretch. I mean, I think they move on from Vincent Jackson and Doug Martin, and, you know, Golson's a guy I would like them to keep. But overall, I mean, both their safeties are up. So, yeah, I kind of look at it like this is a good opportunity to move on from those guys. Like, let them hit the road, enter free agency with a lot of needs, but also a lot to spend and some draft capital and bring in some new bodies. That's how I would handle it with Tampa. King Conklin asks, Titans run a lot of 12 personnel. That's one back, two tight ends. How would you like pairing Walker up with a young tight end like O.J. Howard? I like it a lot. And pull back the curtain, they were one of my AFC teams that could make a lot of noise in free agency, in the draft, in the offseason. And I expect them to take big leaps forward this year and have a strong offseason. And I actually think because they have so many resources, they could afford somewhat of a luxury like that. You know, and this is a really good tight end draft. If Howard's sitting there in that first round, I think he would be a very nice, you know, heir apparent to Walker in a much bigger degree, kind of a Hunter Henry gate situation from last year, but he's a better prospect than Henry, and Walker's not as far along in his career as Gates. But bringing that young tight end to learn from and to grow with Mariota, I like it a lot, and they probably will have quite a few needs filled in free agency by that time. They have 2 first-round picks. I would have no qualms with that whatsoever, and certainly not a need. I mean, I'll be doing team needs and things, and they will not be, tight end won't be at the top of the list, that's for sure. But maybe when the draft rolls around after they fill corner and receiver or things like that, then maybe. You know, I have no qualms with that, especially as good a player as Howard is. I think that's a good fit. All right, I'm going to take one more question. Jack Christensen asks, I realize he's a Hall of Famer already, but where does Chris Carter sit in your pantheon of all-time wide receivers? Awfully high. Probably a little lower than some people have him, though. And I guess I'm a little bit biased against the guys that aren't freaks. You know, that when you're comparing them to Moss, T.O., Calvin, I feel like if I was a corner, I'd rather guard Chris Carter all day than those guys. You know, I mean, he's not 6'5". You know, he's amazing, a master technician, best hands maybe of all time. I mean, I think top 5 to 8 neighborhood is probably where I would put him if I were to do my all-time receivers list. And maybe that'll be an off-season project and a dull, you know, when times get a little tough to come up with content. Maybe I'll, you know, go Rice and Moss, and then who's number 3? I would put Fitzgerald ahead of him too. You know, do you put guys like Marvin Harrison ahead of Carter? Probably not. Close. But yeah, I mean, I respect him a lot. Great player. I just, at that position, I tend to lean towards putting the freaks higher. You know, the guys that have special size, speed, traits, you know. Would you rather guard Chris Carter all day or Julio Jones? You know what I mean? I mean, that's just my point there. And that's not a knock on him at all. But that's going to do it. Good Twitter Thursday, folks. Tomorrow we're going to break down the world champion Patriots. They have a lot. It's going to be a really interesting offseason for them. So I urge you to check that out. And we'll talk about any other news that's going on around the league as well. But that's going to do it. Over and out. See ya.
Support for this podcast comes from NetSuite. NetSuite lets you run your business from your phone, so you can see what's going on with your company in real time. Go to netsuite.com/podcast to get your free guide and find out why NetSuite is the last business system you'll ever need.